Here we go with a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush. Glad you're on board. Buckle up. Get ready for the two-hour ride. We take you up until 6 o'clock with your daily local sports fix. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. Oh, busy day. It's one of those days that sales reps know exactly the pain and suffering that I have been through because today was field day. And you know what that means. The boss gets to ride with you and analyze and review kind of dissect everything you do throughout the day. And so I have been through that amazing amount of pain today on my sales side of the job. And so it's been a very rushed day trying to prepare and get ready for the show. But here we go. We've got a big show ahead. Ryan Abbott is the new Carroll boys basketball coach. He takes over after a decade up in Butler coaching the Eastside Blazers. And we'll talk to Ryan Abbott coming up at 4:20 about what to expect from the Carroll Chargers, what kind of style he plans to implement, how will things be the same, how will they be the different than what we might have seen in the past from Marty Beasley's teams. We'll talk to Ryan Abbott about what he expects to do with Carroll coming up at 4:20. At 4:35, how about the Eastside Blazers? One step closer to that 2A state title. They are playing the state championship baseball game this weekend, and Aaron Willard, the coach, is going to join us once again. We had him on before, figured it was good luck, so we'll have him on again. And he'll be on at 4:35. In our next hour, we talked to TinCast President Mike Nutter. I tell you what, if you're looking for any kind of summer work, maybe it's to supplement the income, maybe you took a little bit of a hit during the pandemic year, and you're trying to make some money back that you maybe didn't earn last year in 2020. Perfect way to do it is to work at the ballpark. You kind of select what days you're available. You can work as much or as little as you like. They're looking still for over 100 employees to kind of fill out the staff so that they can open to full capacity. And hopefully we don't have limits on the capacity because there's not enough employees. I would hate to see that happen, that they finally say, you know what, the CDC, the Allen County Board of Health, everybody is saying, let's go full bore, let's go 100%, let's open up the capacity, and then the tin caps can't actually do it because they can't service customers with limited staffing. So those jobs available, we're going to talk to Mike Nutter, TinCast President, about that coming up at 5:20. And then at 5:35, it's our weekly visit with Tommy Schegler. Now, you remember last week, Tommy Schegler had his Tommy's Top 5, which was the top five boys teams for the 2020-2021 high school year. Today, he's going to have the top girls teams. So we've got a special Tommy's Top 5 coming up at 5:35. The U.S. Open is underway. Of course, this weekend, the Tin Caps will be on the road, but the Comets will have their chance to get the series started for the Western Conference Finals against Allen. That game tomorrow night will be right here on our sister station, just down the dial at 1190 AM and 107.5 FM. Of course, WoWo Radio, your home for Comets hockey, with Shane Alberani on the call. Shane right now taking the flight down to Dallas to get all set from Allen as the Comets take on the Allen Americans starting tomorrow night. Saturday night will be game two, and then game three with tickets on sale now. No, they're not on sale now. They're on sale tomorrow morning. 10 a.m., you can get your tickets to Comets hockey tomorrow, so be ready to do that. Jump on, get them online at Ticketmaster.com, or you can stop at the Coliseum ticket office. But the Comets against Allen on Monday at the Coliseum at 7:30, and then, of course, games 4 and 5, if necessary, will just follow consecutively. Monday is game 3. That one's a for-sure game. And then, if necessary, game 4 would be Tuesday. Game 5 would be Wednesday, back to back to back. And that means 5 games in 6 days to be able to win the championship of the Western Conference and advance to the Kelly Cup Finals. That's the goal ahead of the Comets as they'll start play tomorrow night. So it is a busy day. And, of course, last night we had NBA basketball, and Playoff P looked a little bit like KD last night. Playoff P came to play as Paul George leads the Clippers to the win at Utah, and the Clippers have now taken a 3-2 lead in this series, and they won it without Kawhi Leonard. Paul George picked up the slack, but we've got to give some credit where credit is due, because there were a couple of things that happened this week when the big-time players stepped up. They overshadowed other really great performances by guys that are normally relegated to role player roles. Jeff Green for Brooklyn was fantastic for the Nets. And even though Kevin Durant put up 49 points, I don't know if they win without the production of Jeff Green. And then last night, you've got to give credit to Reggie Jackson, who all of a sudden looked like the player he was when he was leading the Detroit Pistons. And Reggie Jackson brings defense. He was an offensive spark plug last night. Really liked what he provided for the Clippers in that win against Utah. But it's playoff P putting up the numbers, 37 points. You know, he had 16 rebounds. Playoff P was playoff P, and you got to give playoff P some credit last night, Caleb. Have I said playoff P enough? I think I have. Paul George, former Indiana Pacer, comes through for the Clippers. This one really surprised me. But Donovan Mitchell, clearly not himself, did not have a typical Donovan Mitchell type night. We thought Donovan Mitchell, of course, this is pretty much our week as far as picking NBA. We thought Donovan Mitchell would have a chip on his shoulder because he didn't get selected to one of the top three teams in the All-NBA voting. And so we thought, okay, it's going to be a huge night for Donovan Mitchell. It's too much pressure for Paul George. He's not going to be able to handle being the number one guy. We were both on board with Utah last night playing at home in Utah, and we were wrong once again. I tell you what, Caleb, it's getting to a point where I'm going to go through and I'm going to calculate exactly what I expect to happen and make my best guess as to who is going to win, and then I'm going to leave the show and I'm going to put my money against me. I'm going to go the other way because that's kind of weak it's been for picking the NBA.
Well, the teams that should be, I mean, the Jazz, with how they started, they only had a 5-point halftime lead last night. I mean, they were just, didn't they hit like 17 threes in the first half? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
They were 3 for 24 in the second half. In shooting threes. They could not hit anything. And, you know, you almost feel with like Utah, you could put one of those memes or one of those posts where it says, you know, how it's going and how it started or whatever the case may be. Because Utah started with just absolute dominance over the LA Clippers. Didn't look like this was even going to be a series. And now here we sit after five games, Clippers lead at 3-2 and got a chance to go back home and wrap up the series. And I don't know yet if they've made any ruling decision or if there is a report as far as the status of Kawhi Leonard for game six. But I will give credit to the Clippers. They stepped up and did something that I didn't think they could do, which was win on the road, a pivotal game in a playoff series with Paul George as the go-to guy. He got the job done last night.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he kept him in the game, especially in the first half when, I mean, they should have completely unraveled with how Boyan was shooting.
Boyan was unbelievable.
He was unbelievable.
How about that? We're watching former Pacers just have all kinds of success everywhere else, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're watching playoff P have a big night. Boyan just absolutely on fire in that first half. And then Nate McMillan, which we'll talk about that situation. Boy, it was a good night for former Pacers. If they could only have done this when they were actually Pacers.
Kawhi is out indefinitely, by the way, so I would not expect him to return for Game 6 because they think it's a possible ACL injury. I don't think that's going to be anything he's going to come back from anytime soon, even if it's not.
Indefinitely is much stronger than a questionable.
Exactly. So I would not expect Kawhi back for the Jazz. I mean, this is a massive blown opportunity. You're at home. Hot shooting in the first quarter. I mean, Boyan was 6 of 6 from three early on, scored 32, but really struggled after that hot start, especially from distance. I mean, comparatively, at least. And then, you know, you mentioned Donovan Mitchell, 6 of 19, struggled from three, not really much of a factor. You know, Paul George, for all the crap he gets for saying playoff P, you know, he really came through last night.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. If Kawhi Leonard cannot play again this season, if it turns out to be some type of an injury that takes him out for the remainder of whatever playoff run the Clippers have, it in some ways is the NBA getting kind of screwed because of the success of playoff P? Because let's be honest, Utah, fully healthy, is probably going to be a better challenge in the next round to Phoenix, then the Clippers would be minus Kawhi Leonard. Am I right in saying that? Because I haven't been right about much with the NBA. So, is it a better matchup for TV? Because that's where the money's at, right? And in pro sports, NBA, NFL, it's all about the TV money. And because fans usually show up for the playoffs to see their team, regardless of whether the stars are going to be available or not, you still want to pull for the hometown team. But in this case, the TV revenue and the TV numbers, and they've done pretty well so far in the playoffs. Wouldn't it be better for the NBA to see the Clippers or the Utah Jazz come back now in this series against Clippers if Kawhi Leonard is a long-term casualty? Or is it better to have the team from the biggest market, LA, still playing shorthanded?
The NBA is always going to favor the team from the biggest market, no matter what. I mean, that's just unfortunately how they have done it for years. And I think there are ways to break that apart. Number one is, you know, the TV schedule pretty much guarantees the big market teams an advantage in that alone. But I mean, with the Clippers having your, you know, best, second best, whatever way you want to argue it, player out and probably not returning. All this does is probably in theory that should prolong the series. But then again, what we thought should have happened last night in both matchups did not happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, for about three quarters of the game in the Philadelphia-Atlanta game, it did happen. It happened exactly like we thought it was going to happen. Philadelphia was just pounding Atlanta's you-know-what. And 26-point lead for the Sixers at home, and they blow it. They quit playing. Number of guys couldn't buy a bucket. Tobias Harris became a complete no-show in the second half. Ben Simmons was just awful. In fact, I watch Ben Simmons and I'm like, what is his market value right now? I think he's been overrated. I think he's still overrated. He's got too many liabilities. He's a positionless type guy. They call him a point guard, but is he really a point guard? That was a disaster, an embarrassment. And the question is, what will Philadelphia's response to that be? Did that actually whoop them out, or are they going to be able to somehow bounce back from that? Because that was among one of the worst collapses and failures that we've seen in NBA playoff history.
This just in, Rick Carlisle will not be returning as coach to the Mavericks. He informed Mark Cuban that he's not coming back. So that, Rick Carlisle on the market.
And I think, well, that would be interesting. Rick, remember your time in Indiana? Wasn't it a good part of your life? There's some big name coaches that are starting to hit the market. I think this one, I don't know, does it say anything about why? Because I'm going to speculate here as to why. Donnie Nelson was let go. And we've heard the comments from Luka Doncic about what's happening behind the scenes in Dallas, and that Mark Cuban has all of a sudden become very close with a former sports gambler who's taken on a position in the front office for the Dallas Mavericks. And Mark Cuban, this guy has Mark Cuban's ear. He's a former gambler, and I guess what happened was he was very successful, I think, back in the 90s. And then in the 2000s, he went through a period where he lost pretty much all his money, lost millions. And so he came up with a lot of algorithms and analytics to be able to put together some type of advantage in sports gambling, and was able to start winning a lot of bets based on these analytics that he developed. And it was proprietary information that he had developed because he wanted to figure out a way to get an advantage and to make money doing sports betting, because he had just lost a ton doing it. Well, it ended up getting the attention of Mark Cuban, who then hires him, and then they share their analytical information, which Mark Cuban has become very engaged with. And in fact, they're saying that there are plays, out-of-bounds plays, that are called by the Mavericks simply because this guy has analytics that say this is the best play to run in certain situations. And it's probably gotten to a point where Rick Carlisle has felt somewhat handicapped as the coach. And if you take the guy that is your safety blanket away, and the safety blanket was Donnie Nelson, you take him out of the equation, and now it's Mark Cuban, this former sports gambler who loves his analytics, Mark Cuban, who loves the sports gambler's analytics, and then Rick Carlisle, and we already have heard from Luka Doncic that this guy with the analytics is setting up all these plays and programs and everything, and he's calling shots during the course of a game. Well, that basically takes a lot of the coaching away from Rick Carlisle, and I think that is probably Once they removed Donnie Nelson, there was no longer a safety blanket, that if Rick Carlisle wanted to call a play, that there wasn't a Donnie Nelson to explain it to Mark Cuban or this other guy, and I wish I had his name right in front of me. But so Rick Carlisle, now one of the coaches that's available. Now, you got to look at the jobs that are out there in the market and determine which one would be the most appealing job if a guy does have multiple choices, and where does Indiana rank in that list? Because to me, Boston is going to be one of the premier positions. You've got Jason Tatum. You've got Jaylen Brown. You know, great sports market, great history in Boston. You've got a coach that wasn't fired, a coach that's moved up in the organization. So there's a smooth transition. I think Boston would be the number one job. Maybe Portland would be the number two job. But now the question is, where's Dallas? How do you rank Dallas as far as open position? Is it the third best job now available, bumping above Indiana? What about Washington? What about New Orleans with Zion? I mean, there's some pretty, you know, normally there's a lot of junk jobs that are available that come open because they're teams that are horrible. These are some teams that have pieces or that had a down year because of injuries. These aren't bad jobs. A lot of these are not bad. I mean, Boston's not a bad job. I don't think New Orleans is a terrible job. It just wasn't clicking between Stan Van Gundy and New Orleans.
I go Boston number one just because it's Boston. I go Dallas number two because you have a star in Luka Doncic. You have a championship franchise and an owner that will spend the money to try to get you there. I go New Orleans number three.
But let me intercept on that, Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
But if the rumors are true that Luka is not happy because of the involvement of this former sports gambler, And that the rumored reports that he is now calling plays, he's setting up out of bounds plays. Does that make Dallas still number two? If that's true,
if it's true, no. But we don't know that. And New Orleans, to me, they're always going to struggle because they're considered to be a smaller market team, especially compared to the other two.
Right.
So, and
what about Portland?
Portland's a better job than New Orleans, that's for sure.
Is Dame happy? Is Dame staying in Portland?
He's questioning, but I think he's staying.
So I think I would go Boston number one. I would probably go Dallas based on circumstances number two, but they've got to find a general manager first and name a general manager. Then maybe Portland, New Orleans, Indiana. And then what else you've got? Orlando's open. What's the other job? There's like two other jobs that are open. We'll talk more about that as we proceed through the Thursday edition of the Sports Rush. On the way next, we're talking to Ryan Abbott. He's the coach of Carroll Boys Basketball. Coming up on the Sports Rush, we're going to give you an update on the U.S. Open. They're playing golf out of Torrey Pines on the coast of Southern California. We'll give you an update of what's happening with another major in golf. Also, Mike Nutter will join us here on the program. You just heard him welcoming us back to the show, and he will join us coming up at 5:20. Tommy Schegler from Parkview Sports Medicine will join us at 5:35. Hey, the Carroll Chargers have a new boys basketball coach. Of course, we've been waiting. Marty Beasley announced that he was going to DeKalb a couple of months ago, and now, boom, here we go. We've got the Carroll boys basketball coach, and his first bit of business is to join us here on the Sports Rush. And so we're glad to have on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline former Eastside coach Ryan Abbott, now taking over as the Carroll coach. First of all, Ryan, congratulations. New gig, great opportunity.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, too. But yes, definitely excited for the opportunity.
And let's just talk about your style of basketball. Of course, you know, sometimes it depends on the kids as to what style you get labeled as a coach. But, you know, there's a lot of similarities, I think, with what was done at Eastside, what's been done at Carroll. Do you see those similarities continuing?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, Coach Beasley, a mentor of mine, and just one of the best coaches in the state of Indiana, in my opinion, and really has instilled a defense-first mentality. He and I have the same belief there that, you know, if you play defense every night, you can count on that. And, you know, some nights you can't count on whether your shots are going to go in and things like that. So I think it starts on defense. And then, hey, offensively, we want to play as up-tempo as our personnel and opponent will enable us. And to be successful. In some games, you'll be able to get up and down and play a free-flowing style, and you know, the other games are kind of grind-out games where, you know, you have to earn every point, every possession. So, you know, hey, whatever will enable our team to be successful at Carroll and our kids will buy into, we're going to go ahead and do.
Of course, for those that haven't followed what you've done at Eastside, you know, talk about your time at Eastside and kind of what you learned on the job there over the past decade. You've got plenty of experience. You've had some success with the teams up in Butler. What have you learned at Eastside that you feel you can bring to this position at Carroll?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, I can't say one negative thing about the DeKalb Eastern and Eastside community. They treated me and my family with the utmost support, and that was from year one when we were grinding out to, you know, win 9 games to our 20-win season and different things like that. So the support at Eastside High School and DeKalb Eastern Schools has been tremendous. I think that started with Aaron Willard, their athletic director. Fortunately, I'm able to go from one exceptional athletic director in Aaron Willard to another one in Dan Ginder at Carroll. So I think most coaches would be jealous to work for just two high-quality guys like that. But experience at Eastside, you know, it was my first head coaching experience, and I think that's important for anyone to get. You know, I think that moving from one chair over from being assistant to a head coach is obviously a different role when things come back on your shoulders and making those game time decisions and scouting adjustments and things. And overall, you know, running a program as well, you know, the size of the Carroll Youth League and Carroll camps and things like that, and going to two middle schools, I think Eastside was a really good kind of preparation builder for me to get to that level. And obviously working there before helps. You know, I went back through the interview process and saw some familiar faces and some people that I've not seen in quite some time, and some relationships that I have missed since leaving Northwest Allen County and Carroll. So excited about that. And, you know, some of that credit goes to our players at Eastside. I was fortunate to coach some really good ones that bought into our system, and we were able to have enough success where, you know, when the Carroll job was open, it was a possibility that those puzzle pieces lined up, and I'm happy they did.
I know you're now wearing the Carroll blue, but I would imagine this weekend you might sneak a little bit of a color green on for that Eastside baseball team. You talk about Aaron Willard and working for him in his role as athletic director, but he's got a pretty big responsibility this weekend and a pretty talented son to go in for a state championship in Class 2A baseball.
Hey, I tell you what, I'm not sure if you think, I think some people coach, and then I think some people are a coach. And Aaron Willard is a coach. I mean, from his days of coaching varsity basketball, winning a sectional to the state title in softball, and now, you know, a chance to do it with the baseball team. Yeah, it might be a lack of sleep with the 8 o'clock game Monday night, but my family and I will be down there supporting former players of mine, Owen Willard being one on the mound, who maybe is as tough of a competitor as I've ever coached. Just an exceptional competitor, and then happens to be he can throw baseball too, so that helps. yeah, I'm going to be down there Monday night, really excited. I know the Eastside community is excited, and a lot of players and coaches in that school district that I respect, and hoping to cheer them on for a state championship.
And of course, when you take over a varsity basketball program at this point, most people would say, oh, well, it's months before the season starts. But there's a lot of key moments throughout the school year or throughout the year that are learning moments for a high school basketball team. And, you know, I don't want to say you've missed some, but you're kind of catching up late here. How big of a concern is it for you to be a little behind in what other schools are doing as far as summer programs?
You know, it is, and you're exactly right. I think of when I think of important months in basketball, I think you go right to November, and then, boy, the next most important month in preparation might be the month of June, the way that the high school programs work now. So, you know, it is. We've missed out on 2 weeks, but fortunately, I know, you know, the hiring process was probably a little bit longer than myself or the Northwest Allen administration or even players' parents and players wanted. But I think, you know, making sure those puzzle pieces fit and it's the right fit's the most important thing. I've been planning these last 2 weeks in June for quite some time now, and we're going to pack as much into June as we can. We've got two workouts in, and We're going to go play at Findlay University tomorrow to get some game action because, hey, the players want to play. They want to compete. And unfortunately, and we're not the only ones at Carroll, but, you know, we lost out on that opportunity last June due to COVID. So, you know, it might be ugly early and a lot of learn by doing of some of my philosophies and terminology for the guys. But, hey, we're going to jump in and pack as much into the short couple weeks of June as we can, and then we'll break down some skill work in July and, you know, get out and see some guys play AAU and just kind of learn what our roles can be. I also think the IHSA rules of limited contact help us a little bit where we'll get those 2 days a week where, you know, in the old days, and this may age myself a little bit, it was pulling groups of two and things like that. So the limited contact rules will help us catch up. I know it seems like we've missed them a lot, but we've probably missed three workouts and maybe two shootouts the last 2 weeks. So I think we'll be able to manage it, Carroll.
Welcome to the SAC. I'm sure we'll cross paths many times in the future.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And hey, go Blazers Monday night. And appreciate your support with Carroll Athletics.
Absolutely. Coach Ryan Abbott, the new Carroll boys basketball coach, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And speaking of that Eastside team that's playing for the state championship, we've got the coach, Aaron Willer, joining us next. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Stories breaking from Chicago that the Chicago Bears have put a bid on the property at Arlington Park, which is about 30 miles or so northwest of downtown Chicago. Are the Bears looking at building a new stadium and moving out of downtown Chicago and Soldier Field? We'll talk about that coming up later in the show. Right now, we want to talk high school baseball. And last week, we had two that went into semi-state and one that advances to a state championship game. And that team, the Eastside Blazers, they were dominant in a 9-1 win at the semi-state. And so now they go on to play Providence in a 2A state championship game coming up Monday night down in Indianapolis. And the coach of the Eastside Blazers joins us now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And I'll tell you, Coach, I know you can't tell everything about a game just by watching some highlights, but I reviewed a lot of the highlights of your game at the semi-state. Thing that impressed me was that your guys went up there with at-bats where they didn't try to do too much. They just went with the pitch. They didn't try to over-hit it. And I just thought they were great at-bats all the way up and down your lineup. Really successful day at semi-state.
Yeah, we had some really good at bats. You know, we struggled early on, and even midway through the season, we had a lot of high strikeouts, total games, and you know, we kind of focused on that of getting, you know, some quality at bats, and it's played off in the tournament.
And you know, and it seemed to me that it, you know, every high school team usually has the strength at 2-5 in the order, but it seemed like you had guys giving some quality at bats all the way 1-9.
Yeah, I mean, we've lengthened our order a little bit. Some guys have picked it up late in the season, about the last 10 games in regular season. Some of those guys at the bottom of our orders really come on, and it's really lengthened our lineup. And obviously, like you said, if you can get that in high school baseball, if you can get it, you know, your order clicking down into 7 and 8, you're going to be pretty good.
Of course, and as a result, you're producing runs almost every inning. And that's what you did in building that 9-0 lead. And, boy, there for a moment, I don't know who gets more nervous in a situation like this, the parent or the athlete. But Owen Willard had a chance at the no-no. He was just pitching brilliantly. What were the keys to Owen's performance on Saturday?
I mean, Owen is just about every time out. So he's pitched like that most of the year. If you'd probably ask him, he probably wouldn't even like that performance because he walked too many. But it was a difficult day. The heat and the humidity on that turf was tough on both pitchers, I think. And so he battled through it. Owen's been really good for us the whole year, and we've come to kind of expect that, those type of performances.
And got another winner, and you're looking for one more out of Owen. And, of course, with Providence being the opponent, I don't know if this is a surprise. Providence just kind of squeaked through early rounds in the tournament, but, boy, they had an impressive semi-state win, 14-1 over University. So now you get Providence. What do you know about this team?
Obviously, hey, they're really good on the mound. You don't get to this point without that. They have a high-level player that hits second for him, and Eli Watson. He's going to go to Western Kentucky on a scholarship. A very good stick, is known for his hitting. And so he's a concern, obviously. Just like many high school teams, you know, they're stacked at the top of their lineup. If we can control some of those guys up top, I think we can be right in the game.
Is baseball kind of unique in the fact that you really have to control that adrenaline and those emotions? Like in some sports, I think that adrenaline and that energy really helps you. I'm not sure if it's a positive when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I think it with baseball, especially with pitching, you know, it's common to, hey, get settled in, you know, get a good feel for it, get a good feel for your pitches and things. So, obviously, at this level, you know, kids probably put a little bit more pressure on themselves to perform. So, hey, our message is just go out and have fun. We've already, in a sense, won. You know, now it's just whether we're going to get red or blue. And, you know, our message to our kids is let's be blue all week and work to prepare and play our best on Monday.
Coach, are you going to ask the athletic director for an extension?
I don't know about that. I don't know. I would hope. We're pretty good friends, so.
You've got a good relationship, I would imagine.
Most days.
Well, you will definitely know how to pick and choose the right day. I will say that if you're going to ask. But
that is true.
I do want to also say something about the Butler community, because I just know the buzz that's going around Butler and the support that the Eastside Blazers baseball program has gotten. And I think that's one of the great things about high school sports, how it brings communities together and they really get excited and filled with pride when the local high school team does something special like this.
Yeah, I mean, we put out a shirt order, and within about a day and a half, we had 550 shirts that we sold, and orders keep coming in, you know, later. So we've ordered some extra, but that shows you a little bit about how excited we are. Our fans and parents and our community has been great through this whole run, not only in baseball. Hey, they support Eastside Athletics, and that's what I love about this community.
Well, best of luck coming up on Monday night. We'll be pulling for you here in the 260. We'll follow the game on Monday. And, hey, I'd love to be able to talk to you about a state title.
That would be awesome. That would be great.
All right. Well, good luck, Coach. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That is Aaron Willard, coach of the Eastside Blazers, also happens to be the athletic director at Eastside. So if you didn't catch the sarcasm and the joke there, it was that Aaron Willard is not only the athletic director, but he is the baseball coach for Eastside as well. They'll take on Providence 8 o'clock on Monday night down in Indianapolis for a Class 2A state baseball title. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back. Plenty more on the show. If you've got anything to add, be sure to text it to us, 46862. That's 46862 on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Of course, we'll get updates throughout the weekend on the U.S. Open taking place at Torrey Pines out in Southern California. And the question was, how would Phil Mickelson respond after having that win at the PGA Championship over on the East Coast? Now that he's on the West Coast, closer to home. And, of course, a lot of people pulling for Phil. He's playing in his hometown. And unfortunately got off to a 3-over start, but he is trying to bounce back. We'll get updates not only throughout the rest of today, but tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday, and keep you up to date on what's happening with the U.S. Open. We also have updates, a couple of big dropouts or withdrawals from Wimbledon. Rafael Nadal has dropped out of Wimbledon. Also, who did we just learn dropped out as well?
Naomi Osaka. She will participate in the Olympics in Tokyo, though.
So no Wimbledon, but we'll be back for the Olympics. And now, is she the one that was having the mental issues and dropped out because of her own mental well-being?
Yes, she dropped out of the French Open. So, but previously, so
taking a little time away before jumping in for the Olympics. All right, there's some news and notes. Now, we just mentioned this before our last segment, before we had our last guest, that the Chicago Bears are putting a bid in for Arlington Park Racetrack, which is owned by Churchill Downs, and apparently there are multiple bidders. The Bears are trying to be the highest bidder to get that property. We just don't know what their plans are in using it. And the Bears aren't being real specific. What they're saying is they're looking at their options that will be in the best interest of the Chicago Bears Football Club and the future of the Chicago Bears Football Club. Now, we know that the Bears would like some upgrades and updates to Soldier Field in downtown Chicago, and they want the city to actually pay for those. I know a lot of people really resent this, that billionaire owners want everything paid for by taxpayers. And I'm not sure, this doesn't make sense to me, in the fact that Soldier Field is not exactly an aging football stadium, because that was completely revamped and rebuilt, what, 15, 20 years ago? I'm trying to remember, when was the new Soldier Field actually open? Do you know?
I mean,
is that a Tuesday time capsule trivia question?
It could be, but yeah, I mean, this was done after 2000, so it's not like it's been that long.
So what are they, do you know what they really want out of that stadium? I'm not sure exactly what kind of upgrades they want, but what they're doing to try to get some leverage with the city to get this is they are going out, trying to bid on and buy property that would be about 30, 35 miles outside of downtown in Arlington Heights. And then what? Is that a threat to build their own stadium and work with the mayor and the administration of Arlington Heights to build a new Chicago Bears stadium in the suburbs? Is it to put together a Chicago Bears training complex, much like the Colts have their complex on the west side of Indy? Would that be what they would do, is build it in the suburbs where a lot of the wealthier suburbs are? So you got a lot of players that live out that direction. I don't know what the end goal is here and what the Chicago Bears ultimately want. Do they want the city of Chicago to upgrade Soldier Field, or would the Bears prefer to just jump out of Soldier Field and build their own stadium? But they may have options if they have the winning bid on the Arlington Park Racetrack, the former Arlington Park Racetrack being sold by Churchill Downs, as the Bears are submitting a bid to buy that property. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862. Questions, comments, or suggestions? Up in our next hour, we talk to TinCast President Mike Nutter. We also talked to Parkview Sports Medicine Director Tommy Schegler. He's got a Tommy's Top 5 of the top girls teams from 2020-2021 in high school sports. We've got that on the way before 6 o'clock with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.